The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more. Talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. The Dow Jones average up 107 points today, closing at 17,792. The NASDAQ at 49.14, still not at that important 5,000 level, but up 44 nonetheless. The S&P 500 closed above 2,000, 2072, adding 13 points. Stock market had a heck of a good month as we wrap things up here for March. Of course, that followed, as it often does, a period of decline. So it was sort of a recovery sort of a thing, up slightly year-to-date so far. Keep in mind that no investments on the growth side grow all the time. It's a sporadic part of a portfolio. You get it sometimes and sometimes you don't. So it's not as reliable as dividends. And those are the two ways that accounts make money, is dividends and growth or capital gains. And so it's a mix of things. If you're on the younger side, you really should be looking more for dividends. But you always want to have some growth, I think, is a good idea. And if you're really young, you don't care too much about dividends and you want more growth. So I think we need to look at our investments and investment questions maybe a little bit different way from now on, based on whether you're accumulating, a holder, or if you're distributing. So for example, if you ask me about something like a Fidelity Contra Fund or an aggressive growth fund in general, any one of them, you just ask me that question, do you think that's a good investment, Stephen? It would be the first thing that would be important to know would be, are you accumulating it? Meaning, is it in your 401k plan? You're buying shares all the time? Because if you are, that's a very good use for that tool, because it's very volatile, share price. Aggressive growth funds go up and down the most. If it's something that you're adding to on a regular basis through your payroll deduction, then an aggressive fund that you're on the younger side, or you at least have, 10 years or plus to invest for, then I'd say that's a very appropriate selection for you. If you're holding it, not accumulating, I mean, you're not buying anymore, I would just point out to you the extreme volatility of such a beast. And if you said to me, I'm in distribution mode of my life, meaning I'm taking money out of my portfolios, I would say that doesn't sound like an appropriate one for you at all. So a person could be, the same age in the three scenarios, ask the same, very same question, and really should get three different answers depending on how they're using the tool at the moment. You say each of these investments, and there are many of them, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 now, a variety of things. They all have a use that is most efficient for them. Some things are really good at producing dividends, like preferred stocks. Some things are really good at growth, like tech companies, NASDAQ-like stuff, long-term, very long-term. And so dividends and growth are really the two opposite ends of the spectrum. In the large cap stock arena, which is, the number one category for most people that invest in stocks. Because large companies have little to no debt and are much less likely to, go out of business on you, where small companies sometimes can get pushed out of the market by bigger companies. And small companies often have carry quite a bit of debt, and that makes them more risk as well. And they pay little to no dividends, so they're really speculative, small company stocks, and they really would be very appropriate for 30 or 40 year old 401k participant to sock some of your allocation away in an account like that. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. We're a station for talking business. Our numbers here are 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. If you'd like to chat about the market, where you are in your cycle as far as retirement goes, that's the big goal in the end, There's all kinds of answers to educational woes. Some people are very successful without much of it at all. Some people have much of it and it doesn't work too well. I mean, you just never know. Retirement is definite. You will get there. You will not want to work anymore after 35 or 40 years. Perpetual unemployment, my old friend Bob used to call it. Retirement is perpetual unemployment, which is really what it is, just living without having a job. So Don So is one of his favorite quotes is, you have to create a money machine. You are the money machine while you're working. And then when you someday want to stop, you have to have another machine to replace it. Now, the good news is you may not need nearly as much to live on as you think. I have people come in my office on a regular basis and are terrified about retirement. They might be, you know, my age, 50s. They got 10 years, you know, more to go. The first question is, what do you think you'll need to survive on? And most of the time they go right to that standard 75% number of what we have now, you know. And that can be dead on accurate, and many times it can be, but it can be very off as well. You know, every family is very different in the way that they handle and run their money. If you have a couple who are both making pretty good money, but they had six kids, not like one or two like the rest of us, well, let's say they had six children, and just because of their belief system, they had to go to private schools. High schools, tons of money, tons of cash. My point is, a couple like that could make a lot of money and still not have any money if they've got six kids and they believe in the private schools, you know, things like that. So everybody's, you know, different in their life and how the money gets played out. And so it's important that you understand your style, not only of investing, but also of spending. And a couple like that can retire often because their needs were never a large part of the family budget. That's my wife and I. I'm totally comfortable driving. I have a 9-year-old car right now. I have a beautiful boat, but it's 12 years old. You know, I'm not a fancy guy, so I don't need anything flashy. And I had three children, and the vast majority of my earnings for 35 years went to people other than me. Income taxes to share with the country, and then family, house costs, college costs, automobiles, car insurance. You know, it's a lot, you know, and it's wonderful, and I'm glad that I did it. But my point is that a large percentage of the cash that was earned, you know, during those 40s and 50s, my wife and I didn't spend it anyway. It was on things that are no longer there, like a house full of kids, you know, college tuitions, five cars in my driveway at one time. You know what the insurance bills were like? You know, during that. Now, they helped out. They all chipped in. They're great kids. But, you know, it was a lot for all of us. So my point is, imagine a couple that's been making $160 a year, right, no children. When they retire, they probably need most of that income because they've been the only ones living on it. But a couple with the very same income but four children is happier with and needs a much lesser income in retirement usually. Now, everyone is different, and the most important thing to do when you are planning your retirement is to make sure that it's customized. Do not use any standards. It may work out for you just fine, but I don't think you want to, you know, roll the dice that way. But make sure, and here's how you do it. And we're going to talk about more in the second part of the program. This is something I started doing about 10 years ago, and it's been very helpful. Once I meet with someone the first time, they want to proceed and go ahead and do planning and all that, you know, we ask them to do a retirement budget. And the second appointment, it's like homework. That second appointment, I want to see it. Bring it in. Yellow pad, nothing fancy. Just write it out. Retirement budget. What will you need to live your life in retirement? Don't give me percents of what you have now. We can go back to that if you'd like, and we can run them both next to each other and look at them. But I just want you to imagine being retired, and what will your scenario be? Hopefully, no mortgage or rent, right? But you still have property taxes and maintenance on a house and all that stuff. But no mortgage or rent. No reason to save money. When I'm 67 years old, I'm not going to care about it. I know people who are worried because they're not saving money. They're 68. I don't get it. I never got that. But anyway, you know, at some point in your life, stop. Time to enjoy, I would think, right? So no mortgage or rent, no reason to save money, no interest in acquisitions. That's me now. I don't want to buy one more thing. I'm 57. I bought a million things. I'm tired of it. Don't want to buy anything else. My clients come in the office. They laugh at me on the radio. They say, we sit at home and listen to you, and we nod our heads and say, yeah, we feel the same way. And for those people that do feel that way, if you've been scared by a lot of what you've heard when it comes to planning your retirement, it does not have to necessarily be that way. There's a couple of other things that have occurred in the industry over a long period of time. There's a standard rule of thumb where people say, oh, you can just take 3 or 4% out of your portfolio when you retire. Well, you can do that if you like. If your goal is to have the principal last forever, I don't know why that would be anybody's goal. You're not going to last forever. And even retirement. If you retire at 65, I say you got 10 years that you can spend money because you need energy and good health to spend money. Remember, you're not going to be acquiring things. And there's no reason to save money. There's no investment goals coming up down the road. You know, retirement's the last one, right? So it may not be as frightening as you think. Some of the general stuff you hear from, unfortunately, my industry, I don't like some of the advertising. I think it does, unfortunately, try to use a little bit of fear. I won't mention any names because I'm warned not to. But one particular very good company ran a commercial years ago where neighbors were talking to each other about what they need for retirement. They were walking around carrying a number. And I've been doing this for 35 years. And I'm thinking to myself, look at the house that person lives in, the car, the way they drive. They, you can tell what their lifestyle's like, you know, monetarily in general. And they wouldn't need anywhere near $1.7 million to retire comfortably. Probably a third of that would be enough. So just be aware that in the marketing side of the financial world, things get skewed in order to push sales and push business and that kind of stuff. So there's a little bit of fear-mongering that goes on in the financial world in general. We've tried very hard to stay away from any of that here on this program. But it's part of the mix. It's part of the soup that we hear every day. So before you get nervous or worried or afraid about your own retirement, sit down with an experienced certified financial planner is our prejudice. We understand that. There are other folks that can do good financial planning for you as well. But that's our preference. That's what we all are here on the program, all of the hosts. And, you know, actually write it out. And I had someone tell me that they needed, you know, $7,000 a month to live in retirement. I said, no way. That's a lot. I said, here's a pen. Write it down. How are you going to spend it? They couldn't do it. She's laughing, giggling. I'm $1,500 a month short. You can't come up with something? No, I can't. You know, and included in that budget was health care, $1,000 a month for health care. I suggested retirement cost out of pocket between premiums and everything else. $1,000 a month, that's a lot. You still have to have a big number monthly for property taxes and insurance on your house. I've included that in my budget. My personal retirement budget is about $4,000 a month. That's not a fluffy living, but that's an adequate, happy lifestyle. And so I think, I know that my compadres in the product sales department of the financial business, which is the other side of how we do it, like to use fear to scare us all into, you know, pushing the money at them, I think. And to some extent, you know, that's their job, you know, to get us to motivate us to move. And you should be a little bit afraid of retiring without enough money. So that it's not completely wrong, but it can be exaggerated. You know how commercial television can be. That can really exaggerate the problem. So if you're the average couple in Rhode Island, you're listening right now, you probably don't need $1.7 million to retire comfortably, not even close to that. You can probably retire relatively comfortably, and you have to be the final person to decide that. You know, don't listen to this. Even someone like myself that says, hey, a couple in Rhode Island with a house paid for, $5,000 a month should be a nice lifestyle. Maybe not for you, you know. But for, I bet you 90% of folks that are listening, no mortgage or rent, no dependent children, no reason to save money, and no interest in buying stuff. I'd love to know why $5,000 a month wouldn't be a wonderful lifestyle here in little old Rhode Island. Hey, this is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. Steve Beauvais in on Wednesdays and Fridays, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. A little great Genesis music. Hey, whether you're an accumulator, that's the younger folks with your 401k plans, and me too. I'm still an accumulator in the investment game. Maybe you're just a holder, meaning you're no longer adding. I have some accounts like that. They don't add to them, but they don't take out either. Some people have accounts like that. They consider that their final expense money, you know, an account. It's just a hell. And I think each of these purposes, and these aren't the purposes you hear about usually. You hear about, you know, like risk. Do you want to be aggressive, moderate, you know, do you need income or not, which is a little bit in this category. But if you're accumulating, there are certain things in the investment toolbox that are most appropriate for that application, right? And that's like aggressive growth funds, things like that, small cap stock funds. I had under my topic for today, under advisor tales, where I just make little notes during the week of actual things that I talk to clients about that I think you might all find interesting. I don't share their names, but they know that I'm talking about them when they hear me. They tell me when I see them next, you know. So if you're an accumulator, a holder, or in distribution mode, like the lady I talked to today was, there's a different answer, I think, to what's appropriate for you. Clearly, if you're in distribution mode, that screams dividends and income, you know. And I think the older that you get, the best way to describe a good investment is one that's similar to commercial real estate, in that in the long run, you really believe it'll go up in value, right? You don't know if it will every year or even every 2 or 3 years. You never know. We've all had some experience probably with real estate, so we know it's not predictable in that, you know, short-term sense. you know, 10, 20 years, I believe if you buy quality real estate and don't buy a dump, you know, long run, you do pretty well with it, almost always, but not over 5 or 6 years sometimes, you know. And so it depends on time frame, but there's a new way of looking at things. Are you an accumulator, are you a holder, or are you in distribution mode? So as you go through these stages of your life, the tools that are appropriate change. I mean, if you wanted to have a little bit of aggressive growth in your account when you're older, as long as it was, you know, a real under 10% or so, I would, okay, I'd go along with that, you know. But I wouldn't want to commit a large portion to that. You see, aggressive growth funds, like the NASDAQ, are still 15 years sub gain, which means if you bought one of these aggressive growth funds 15 years ago, you still haven't made a profit yet. That's frightening, okay? So the older I get, I don't want to, I can have a little bit of that in my portfolio, but the majority of my portfolio, 70, 80% or more, is going to be making something all the time. And that's what dividends are. They're proof of profitability. And dividends don't fake you out. There are companies out there who have lied on their balance sheets, lied in news reports. Stock price goes up, the lie comes out, stock price crashes, you lose all this money. You can't lie about dividends. Either they're paid or they're not, you know, and so they're easy to track. And I really feel the older that we get, we need to be aware of and be much more dividend-minded. Believe it or not, the first question I ask someone when planning their retirement is to tell me about their children and grandchildren. Now, it really isn't about them. It's about the person sitting across from me, right? And why is that important? Well, if you have a child who is 30 years old and is disabled and can't work, and you love the child, as I hope you would, and I would hope I would, you want to build that into your thoughts. Maybe you'll have a financial responsibility for that person forever. And it won't end at the normal age, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, 30s, whatever that children usually grow up and become self-reliant, you know. Some poor folks, things happen, you know, and they're not able to do that. So if you have a child that's disabled or something like that, and I say to them, well, do you provide subsidy? Yes, I do. Okay, well, then on top of your income in retirement, I have to be very aware of what the child's needs are going to be, to make sure that a client has enough to take care of the child first, because if I were the parent and I had a child who was disabled or something beyond their control and couldn't earn a living, I would take care of them first, and I would starve if I had to, if it was my own child. And I'm sure most of you would as well. So it's important to understand and tell your financial people if you have a special issue with your children. Now, the vast majority say, no, they're all grown, they're all doing fine. Oftentimes I hear they're doing better than I am, which is nice to hear, you know. But you know what? I'll tell you what, it's a great country, and I hope my kids do as well as I did. I'll be thrilled with that. This, you know, it's a wonderful thought that each generation will do better and better, but it can't be, because if that was actually happening, eventually we would all be kings. You know, so reality doesn't really work that way. So I would wish for my children a happy life that's not stressful in the money department. And the best way to do that is to listen to Dave Ramsey right here on 790 AM, because Dave is elementary. He's right in the front of your life financially. I understand what the things he preaches. I believe in him completely. I was very fortunate to have believed those things on my own in my 20s, and was always like that, and made very good decisions about money. But I know a lot of people that didn't. So, the Dave Ramsey Show offers such a great place to get started, how to learn about being disciplined with money, because I'll tell you what, it may be hard to swallow, but in the long run of life, the people who are disciplined with it are usually the ones that end up okay. And here's why, because it doesn't matter how smart you are with money if you don't have any. You have to have money to invest, right? You need seed money. So very often it's the person who is just very diligent, hardworking, and just stashes the money away over a long period of time. And I have many clients, and as many of you listening that are not clients, I don't know you, who are, you know, approaching retirement, and you've got quite a nice nest egg accumulated. And thanks to the 401k plan, that really was one of the greatest ideas, I think, that ever came out. It really allowed average folks to really save up quite a bit over a long period of time. I mean, I've met people on a regular basis who had a 401k plan for 30 years, and very regularly it's $1 million. So this is not an odd thing anymore. It's very, very common. Now, keep in mind, this is a whole generation that doesn't have any pension. Years ago, people had pensions in factories and other jobs. So having $1 million today and no pension, it's not quite as rich as it sounds, because probably half of that million, if you have it saved up in retirement, would be equivalent to a robust pension, you know, that you might have worked in a different field and got it that way. So it's a little bit different, but if you need someone to help you put it all together, take a look at the certified financial planners in your area, find someone local to you, or even better, try to get a referral from someone that you respect who you think is maybe a little bit older than you and savvy when it comes to money. And that's usually the best way to find somebody. And I'll tell you, I've been around 30 years here in Rhode Island. I know many of them, and there's a lot of great great financial people you can talk to, and all in from banks to insurance companies to independents. So there's quite a population of us here. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. This is your station for talking business. Hey, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. every evening, we're here. The Money Talk team, Don Sower, of course, and his daughter, Donna Grace Sower Allard. On Tuesday evenings, father and daughter team, my favorite show, because I'm home and the lazy boy, you know. but, you know, it's very interesting. I don't know that there's another show like that. I haven't heard of it. Let's just say that. I don't want to go too far with that. But it's unique, you know. Those of you may have noticed lately, my son is joining me as well on Wednesday evenings in a beginning role, you know, not to give advice or anything, just to be a commentator on history. He's a big fan of history like I am, and as you've noticed, he has a wonderful voice and is doing a great job. Thanks, Nate, for all that work you're doing on Wednesday nights. Now, Wednesday and Friday, again, I said I'm here on Wednesdays and Fridays almost every week, and Don is Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Donna Grace also on Tuesday night. Mix of experiences there, you know. Until you get to be close to 60, you don't realize how differently you think than when you were 30 until you're not 30 anymore. And so it's great to have somebody. What happens is, as you get older, like myself, is you get more conservative. You've been through life. Maybe you've lost both your parents already. Maybe you've had challenging issues with children, paid off giant mortgages, giant college educations. I mean, after getting through this stuff, you're exhausted. You're a different person, you know, than you are at 30. So we tend to be more conservative with our investment thoughts, so we might not be appropriate. My brain might not be great for you if you're 22 and you want a smashing, aggressive, young rascal investment idea. Donna's probably better to talk to than I am for that, you know, because she's more like that. She's more in that stage of life right now. She's reading different things than I do. And she's listening to a little bit different things. It's mostly the same. But there's a little difference there due to age, and it's wonderful to have both available on the Money Talk Show. Hey, last Wednesday when Nathan and I were talking about the news, I bring this up a lot. I say there really isn't any new news. It's just old news on new ears. You know, I mean, there are young people right now hearing things in the news for the first time, and I've heard them every 6 years for 35 years. It comes up again, you know. Reminds me of my dad when he retired from being a mechanic. He gave me bunch of tools, you know, great tools, because he was a professional mechanic. And when I went through it, I saw a couple of pretty impressive ratchet tools that I had never seen before. You know, I was blown away that they were 50 years old. Now, I bought them myself 10 years ago and thought I was a cool cat with this new product. Matter of fact, I think I even showed them to him. He's probably listening right now. And I was saying, Dad, look at this amazing, because I'm a car nut like him. And he didn't say a word because he's humble like that. But he had those things 50 years ago. And they were in that toolbox that he gave me. And so, I mean, news is the same way. I mean, if you've only been an adult for 8 or 9 or 10 years, you know, there's a heck of a lot of news that occurred before you were paying attention to this stuff, you know, and it's just important to understand that there are many things that are repetitive in human nature, and therefore they're repetitive in the financial world. Just to make the point, I brought a copy of this article in with me tonight. I do this once every 6 months to a year. I mentioned this. October 6, 1991, Providence Journal newspaper. Well, this goes back, huh? Full-page article. You know, remember how big the journal was when you opened it up on Sunday? How huge that thing was? 1991, wow. I was very young, but I was fortunate enough to be asked back then to write this article on retirement planning. And it was two whole pages. And I remember my father-in-law, God rest his soul, came over the house with his hand and said, very impressive, young man. And suddenly was interested in my advice all of a sudden. But, you know, it's the reason I brought it up is because every time I read through it, I say, what's changed? And really nothing. I mean, if I had to write the article now, you know, I would slip in, okay, there's these new things called ETFs. But back then, there was mutual funds, annuities, you know, fixed income things. I mean, it's no, you know, nothing. The things don't change because they're fundamental. Now, every now and then, there's something that comes out that's new. But be careful of gimmicks and new products in the financial world, because a financial product is designed first to profit the company, or they wouldn't be offering it. Okay, you know, you're buying a stock. That's not a product. Or you're buying an ETF that has no internal commission structure. That's not buying a product. That's you investing in an investment item. And then you pay somebody separately, or you do it yourself. But, you know, products have a place, of course, but be careful. They can be overused. Tax time is still here. We've been pounding on this one for a while. Please stop getting tax returns, tax refunds in April. The crazy internet nutcases have figured out how to hack into the IRS. The IRS can't figure out how to stop this, and they're taking your tax return. Let's say the end of the year rolls around, nice couple here, works at Attleboro, Massachusetts, couple of little children, very excited, going to get a $6,400 tax refund. The January 1st, it clicks, the clock clicks, boom, the crooks are on you trying to get that, and they've actually figured out how to defraud the IRS and get your tax return. So it was never a good idea in the first place. You don't want to use that as a savings structure. Some people do, and I mean, you're very young. I can understand it. But as soon as you can get away from that thinking, I would advise you to do so. Get a small refund back at the end of the year. If you're very young and not making money, you know, under $250 either way, $250. If you're older, $1,000 either way is good accounting. You don't want to get big refunds. Number one, you're giving the money to the government for interest-free. And there's no reason to do that, in my opinion. Your son, interest-free loan, yeah. A friend that you love and care about, yeah, why not? But I don't want to give the money to anybody outside of my immediate circle for free. Why would you do that, right? So that was always the reason to not have a tax refund. And now there's another new one, and it's worse. You can just lose the whole thing. Now, in fairness to the story, I believe the majority of people that first encountered this, they figured out how to trace it and get the money back, or the IRS has got some kind of system in place to try to help with it now. But it can still happen. And if you're a young family, depending on that refund, what if it took 9 months to get it back? And if you did get it back, it's still tough, you know? What if it happens in April and you're a school teacher that uses that money to get through the summer, and boom, somebody grabs it on you? What good is that to get it back the following February, right? You didn't have it in the summer when you needed it. So please tell your tax folks out there that Steve on the radio said, stop getting tax refunds. That doesn't mean to reduce your taxes as little as possible, because you always want to do that. We want to pay as little in total, but we don't want to have over withhold in order to, you know, and then you create these risks like this. Now, sounds crazy, but I often make these analogies, and I think they're very good myself. I hope I'm right. Between how money and fitness works, physical fitness, both fascinate me. And, you know, calories in, calories out. You take in more than you bring in. If you bring in more calories than you burn, you gain weight, right? A money account works the same way, right? If you're bringing in more than you're taking out, the account balance goes up. If you take it in less than you take it, it goes the other way. It's really quick. It's just really simple math. So, as again, I hate to quote Dave Ramsey as often as I do, but actually, I don't hate to do it. I love doing it because he's just such a what he's bringing to the younger people. I don't work with that age group. My clients are my age and up primarily. You know, a young client for me is 44 right now at my age. You know, so the younger folks are dealing with different issues. They're dealing with debt, mortgage problems. You know, things like that. I had a client in my office today with a difficult real estate problem, a mortgage that's far behind. Do we blow out our retirement account, pay all these giant taxes to save it? We're still looking at it. I told him to call Dave Ramsey, and he said to me, "I have you." I said, "I'm not a debt expert. I'm an anti-debtite. I don't like debt. I pay cash for cars. I try to pay cash for everything I can." And I'm the guy that says, pay off the debt, pay off the debt, pay off the debt. And also never borrow ever to invest. Don't buy on margin. I've been a licensed investment advisor for 35 years. I currently oversee about $100 million, quite a bit more than that over the journey. And not one time have I or anyone I ever worked with bought anything on margin. That's when you borrow to invest. If the investment goes sour, you lose all the money you put in plus. You lose more than you put in. See, with a regular cash investment, you can only lose what you put up. You put up $1,000. If you lose, okay, you lost $1,000. If you buy on margin, you could put up $1,000 and lose $2,000. Okay, so buying on margin is kooky, and don't even think about doing it. Don't take money out of your house to buy a car because it's tax deductible. It's not a big enough advantage. If the world goes crazy on you, you know, and you never know when this can happen. might be beyond your control, something you didn't do at all, you know. Be better if you couldn't make the car payment to say, come take the car. If you bought the car with house equity, you got to say, come take the house. Okay, better give up the car, right? Here's the keys. Maybe you got another car in the driveway you can use. Maybe you can borrow. Maybe ride a bike to work. You know, whatever. So, I mean, these are issues for you younger folks who are still vulnerable financially. If you hit the skids, you know, these things can really rock your boat. Now, those same things happen to somebody my age. Well, you've had a chance to save some. So you hopefully are in a better position where you can handle unexpected turmoil in your financial life. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. This is your station for talking business. Our number is here, as always, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. You can still do IRAs if you haven't filed your tax return for 2015. That's a great way to reduce your income. Comes off the top. Only $6,500 per year for people over age 50. It's a good weapon. If you're a spouse, couple, married, you can do double that, you know, $12,000 a year or so. If you are over 50, the kids are all set, you've got your debts under really good control. One of the best things you could ever do, I think, is Roth IRAs the last 10 years of your working career. First, max out your 401k plan. And if you have the wherewithal to do it, I would max out those Roth IRAs as well. Now, this is the one I get every time. Oh, I can't do that because I max out my Roth. I mean, I max out my 401k. They're not related. You can max out a 401k, and you can max out a Roth IRA as well. Because why is that, Stephen? Well, 401k plans are governed by corporate pension law, and an IRA is a personal account. It's not governed by corporate anything. So there are different rules for that. Now, Roth IRAs do have an income limit to contribute to them, but it's very high. For single people, it's about $95,000. And for couples, you can have an adjusted gross income of up to about $170,000, which is quite lofty, and still do Roth IRAs. There are some very smart people that I hear on the radio, highly accredited, who aren't big on Roths because they don't trust the politicians. They think when you take the money out, they're going to say, sorry, we can't afford that, and they're going to tax it anyway. And I just don't believe that there's a risk of that happening on that. I think if future leadership didn't like Roth, they would just say no more contributions. That's my view on it. So there are some very credible people who I respect very much and listen to on a regular basis on the radio. I won't mention any names. but he's a guy that we hear. He advertises on the station and stuff. He's very well known. His name is Rick Edelman. But because I think he's terrific. He's a great, great financial guy. But I just have a little different twist on it than that. But he would probably tell you to do the regular IRAs on top of your 401k, you know, in the home stretch as you're going into your 60s pre-retirement. So I would probably choose the Roth. You know, when you get to retirement, if all of your money is traditional type 401k plans and regular IRAs, everything you withdraw is taxable like a paycheck at work. And I don't want to be there. I want to be 68 and say, I want to take $20,000 out and buy a car, no tax. You know, so I think some pre-tax is fine, but I wouldn't have exclusively that in the current tax environment. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. Thank you for joining us every evening at 5 p.m., and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. Hey, I'd come in here just for the music. 20 years, this is a lot of fun. I really want to say how much I enjoy doing this. It's Don and I had the same view of this from the very beginning, 25 years ago. And other people that we shared with this with, remember now, when we started this, Don started initially, and I joined him a couple of years into it. But in the beginning when we were doing it, it was really unique. No one had ever done it before. People in the profession that we respected, that we counseled with, were very concerned that we don't let it turn into an infomercial, meaning the information is jaded due to some private agenda you might have versus a news show. And as you can tell, because we've never given our phone number out at our office once in 25 years, and people are surprised to hear that, even those that listen a lot, and they say, I'm not sure I noticed that. I say, well, it's very unique, and you won't hear any other show that doesn't ask you to come and see them at their office. Now, we do meet clients in our office, and you will probably know that. But we don't try to connect the dots directly. We think that's kind of crass, and it wastes time on something that you don't care about, which is my business. And you shouldn't care about my business. You got to care about your business. So, if you're self-employed and you're up against it right now, meaning you got a tax bill you're worried about paying. There's a couple things you can do, and I'm not an expert on this, so do not act upon these thoughts. Seek out professional tax advice. I have a great CPA, and I think it's a wonderful resource to me. If you're self-employed, you can file an extension past April 15th. The extension never lets you put off paying the tax bill, but it lets you defer a contribution. So you can have what's called a simplified employee pension. I have one of these. And I could file an extension on my taxes till about August 15th. These are generalizations. Someone more knowledgeable on taxes would be the final word on it. But you get it buys you 3 or 4 months. You still have to pay the tax, but what you can do is you can say, okay, I'm going to put $10,000 into this retirement account and then tax deduct it. You can file your return, assuming the contribution has been made, and you got till August 15th to do it. Very interesting and very little known to people how to use a SEP account and file an extension to get through some of the leaner years that I had myself, you know, in 25 years ago. So if you're self-employed and you have 1099 income, there are some things you can still do to help your taxes. W-2 employees are really limited these days to what you can do to reduce your taxes. Your 401k plan at work is probably absolutely your best and sometimes only choice for the W-2 gang. If you have any kind of an IRA, Roth or regular, there's a clause in there that says up $10,000 in a lifetime, you can withdraw penalty-free at any age for purchase of a first-time homeowner. Interesting. You could do that, pay no penalty on the money you take out for to help with the down payment, seek out Rhode Island housing here in Rhode Island for first-time home buyers, and maybe get special low financing, educational classes, and possibly even a no-down payment house. What a great way to get started. Now, it's better to get started with $50,000 in cash, but who the heck has that when they're young? I didn't. Everything at that age is a struggle. I remember. I've been there. Haven't forgotten. Hopefully never forget, right? You know, keep an appreciation of when times are a little bit better. But, when you're acquiring things and paying off houses and maybe 5 bodies to feed. Now I have 2 older people to feed. We eat like birds compared to when we were 30. And the three big stomachs are gone. Now they come back and visit a lot, and we love that. And we still feed them. And we love feeding them. That's our favorite thing. But it's not part of the day-to-day activity, as you know. So these things do change as life changes. I remember being, in my 40s, to those of you that are there right now, kids in college, and having fixed expenses at home of $9,000, $11,000 a month to cover everything. That's 5 bodies, education, all that stuff. And I could never imagine a time in my life where it might be only $4,000 a month. But you get there. And so I want to encourage you all that are where I was, age 44, at a tough time, because that's usually around college age for most young families, so it's a lot. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Our numbers here are 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Hey, if you want to get some nice dividends, how about investing in preferred stocks? Believe it or not, 6% right now in dividends you can get by investing in preferred stocks. You can get those today in a nice little package called an ETF. An exchange-traded fund, and there are many of them out there that you can choose from. If that's a little too rich for you because, you're not used to preferred stocks, how about utilities? Now, utilities are your electric company, gas companies. They're very predictable, very consistent. People have to pay their bills, so, the dividends are always there. Almost 4% you can get there. So there's 6 and there's 4. There's a category called global high-yield bonds right now. 8.3%. Just bought some myself. Imagine it. I'm 57 years old. I just bought an investment that pays 8.3% in interest alone. I may have that 25 years from now when I'm here talking to you and have no hair left. Right now it's just graying. But, there are some things out there, and they're not things that you're going to be aware of unless you're kind of financially nerdy, And there are a lot of people who are in other professions. I've got math teachers that are financially nerdy, meaning on a weekend they might read a book on money. Things like that, but there are a lot of things, and these are all today are available for people. You can do it yourself. You don't have to go to a professional. You could purchase any of these ETFs, in an E-Trade account without any kind of high cost, and just collect these beautiful dividends. Now, if you're completely intimidated by doing it by yourself. Don't. Go see someone and pay the person whatever they have to get paid to make a living, and they'll take care of it for you. But, you know, if you're savvy like that, you can do, there's so much you can do today yourself in the financial world versus 20 years ago. You couldn't even get an answer about a stock 24. You had to call the broker, right? How else are you going to find out what Apple's earnings were last quarter 30 years ago? You had to call a broker. He was the only one that knew. That's not good. That's not good. So it's much better today that this information is publicly available, and you can plug into the internet and look up this stuff and find it and see what you think of it all. But it's better that it's all available, I think, in the overall good of things. This is Steve Bove on Wednesdays and Fridays on the Money Talk Show. Thank you again for joining us every evening at 5 p.m. And what a wonderful thing, huh, to be able to say thank you for 25 years on the air. Most financial shows don't last very long at all. And that's because the people that are doing them try to connect it directly to an immediate profit in their own pocket, back at their office, I guess. And it doesn't work that way. If it's done correctly, it takes a long, long time to develop something like this. And so most of them have a very short lifespan. So be careful. I say that there are very good ones. I listen to some of them. I share the names with you of almost competitors of mine who I think are really terrific. But, you never know what the new one's about. And so if you hear a radio program like mine, or like ours, and you're impressed, and I'm sure there are very good ones out there, and young people doing them, just remember they're young people. And make sure that you, it's okay to be new on the radio to handle money for someone, but it's not okay to be new to handling money, to handle the money for them. So it's okay to be new to the radio, but not new to the profession. And I've read a few stories in my professional publications about those type of things happening. Somebody gets on the radio and sounds really sophisticated. Somebody assumes they're really experienced, and maybe they're not. So before you actually open an account with someone, make sure you know how long they've been in the field, what their background is, and try to get it in writing if you can. Hey, for the Money Talk team, this is Steve Bove. Thank you for joining us every night at 5 p.m., and have a safe weekend. And Don Sowa, Monday night at 5.
Folks never adjusted to the great big world.